Ladies and gentlemen, we present The Navy Lark, written by Laurie Wyman and George Evans, and starring Leslie Phillips, Stephen Murray, and John Pertwee. Let's face it, there is a housing problem in this country. Even if you're lucky enough to be allocated a penthouse at the top of one of those blocks of council flats, the lift never works. So you have to totter down all those flights of stairs in your dressing gown to get your milk and morning paper. And by the time you've tottered all the way back up again, the news is out of date and the milk's turned to butter. Even in the Navy, there's a housing problem. Once Jolly Jack is ashore, as Commander Murray and his bride, Rita, have found out through staying with her father and mother, Admiral and Mrs. Perfont Bittox.
1, 2, 3, 4. Miss the snake. 5, 6. Up the ladder. 7, 8. Home.
Oh, buttercups, I've lost again.
Yes.
Forfeit time.
Come on. Give me a smacker. Pay up, Rita.
No, you naughty boy. Somebody might come in the middle of it.
Well, how can they? Your mother's calling the numbers at the Women's Institute bingo. Your father's getting tanked up on pink gin at the Fireman's Bucket and Bell. So come on, lose like the lady you are and pay up.
No, it'll only lead to, well, things.
So what if it does? We are married. Oh, it's always the same. The moment we get round to things, there's always a jolly good reason why we can't thing.
Stephen, stop being an impetuous animal.
Well, I'm fed up. What's the point of playing snakes and ladders and winning when there's no chance of it leading to things afterwards?
Stevikins, you rampaging Romeo.
Well, for your information, I'm jolly glad I applied for it with Wren Peabody 3 months ago in her office. What's more, I got it.
Stevikins!
No, not things. I had to apply to her office for married quarters, and I heard this morning that we've been allocated some. That ought to make playing snakes and ladders worthwhile.
Living here with Mummy and Daddy.
Well, I don't. Neither does my tummy.
Oh, you don't like my cookies.
No, it's not that. But in order to be first in the kitchen in the morning, you had to give me my breakfast at 5 a.m., and I can't get back to sleep because of indigestion.
You never...
And in order that your mother can give the Admiral his din-dins early enough so he can slope off down to the pub on his bike, I don't get mine till midnight. And I can't go to sleep then because of indigestion. I'm fed up.
You mean that honeymoon is over?
No, not at all. It's just that when a fellow's suffering from gale force winds in the morning and at night, well, he's hardly in the mood for, well, things. I'm fed up.
Oh, all right, then. If it'll make you happy, you can have your snacker.
Oh, gosh, thanks. Right, ready when you are.
Oh, crumbs, no, you can't. There isn't time. It's 10:30. You've got to get down to the Fireman's Bucket and Bell, help Daddy onto the saddle of his bike and wheel him home.
Oh, right, you go upstairs and I'll be as quick as I can.
There's no need to rush. I'm terribly tired. I shall probably be asleep by the time you get back.
Oh, things! The sooner we move into those married quarters, the better.
Hello, Mr. Phillips. What are you doing on the bridge? Hanging around in case you get lost before we even start.
No, Chief. You must know, this is my last chance before we put to sea to get on intimate terms with Annie.
Annie? Annie?
Annie can't actually answer you, Chief, but if you press on her button in the middle, she lights up.
Stone me? A novelty lady and flamboyant with it.
No, Chief, that's not what Annie stands for.
From what you've said up till now, sir, I've got the idea the good lady would stand for anything.
Chief, Annie is not a good lady.
That is the impression I've already formed.
But where the blazes is she?
She's a navigational aide. And if you don't know the way home, Annie will take you.
The forward hussy. Well, her place or yours?
No. Annie stands for Automatic Nautical Navigational Instrument Equipment.
Annie? You mean Annie is that lump of mechanical computicles?
Exactly. She's only just been born. What a love affair it must have been.
Pardon?
As I understand it, somebody must have introduced the premium bond computer gentleman, Ernie, to the Greyhound Racing Association's computer lady, Grace, and they fell nut over bolt in love.
I don't know that I quite follow you, sir.
Love will out, Chief, even among transistors. Grace must have liked Ernie's woofers, and Ernie admired Grace's tweeters, and as a result, Annie.
Mr. Phillips,
good morning, and I should warn you I'm fed up.
Now what's the matter, Mr. Murray, sir?
Well, I've had a slight accident on the Admiral's bicycle, and things ain't what they used to be.
Oh, nasty.
It is. Now, as you know, we sail for Hong Kong in an hour to test out Annie.
Gosh, how exciting. Hong Kong. I do hope we don't bump into Sydney Greenstreet.
Who?
No, not Doctor Who. No. You've got a one-track mind. I mean Sydney Greenstreet. Do you remember? The great big fat chap who is head of the spy ring, who are always trying to wipe out Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman and Sham.
Sham?
Yes. That's what Humphrey Bogart called him. Sham is the chap who keeps playing the piano and only knows one tune called As Time Goes By.
Oh, that's Sham.
Mr. Phillips, that film wasn't in Hong Kong. It was in Casablanca.
Well, near enough the same place.
Mr. Phillips, we are not going to get involved with Chinese spies in Hong Kong.
Mr. Greenstreet always owns lots of warehouses on the waterfront, which are supposed to be for his kimono dressmaking business. And when he's not running up kimonos on his little sewing machine, he's got thousands of coolies stealing international secrets that he sells to
Mr.
the highest...
Mr. Phillips, once and for all, there is absolutely no chance of us getting involved with any Chinese spies in Hong Kong.
Oh, Clums, why are you blushing, Glum?
Because it is time for ludicrous Chinese tea ceremony with the master.
What a clown shame, because all three of us prefer instant coffee.
Number three, open curtains which lead into master's chamber. Announce pleasance to master. Number two,
greetings, O master, and glove up.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, I do wish you wouldn't do that, you clownish coolie. I've got a splitting headache. And every time you do that, you tatty tympanist, my head, as you would say, goes round and round like a round bar. And don't do that either. Oh, you silly, silly boy. Now, never mind your disgusting tea. Are you all present?
Number one.
Number two.
Number three.
Every time you say three, I feel as if I am standing in the rain. Now listen. It is becoming increasingly apparent to me that I am not running a terrifyingly efficient organization.
How so, master?
Number one, need I remind you that when you three clever chaps were asked to capture British agent 007, you successfully brought back a gentleman of Scottish descent called Sean Connolly, who proceeded to knock seven kinds of brick dust out of me. Not only that, he nipped off with the best bird I'd had in a helicopter marked a present from Dr. No. Pausing only in midair to bomb three of my warehouses to bits as a farewell gesture. You weren't such clever boys then, were you?
No, Master.
Don't interrupt. You naughty boys. Now, it has come to my notice that the British frigate HMS Troutbridge is due here today. They are testing out a top-secret navigational aid called Annie, and I intend to seize it, as I feel certain this instrument will prove to be a highly saleable commodity to a number of foreign powers once I've demonstrated it on my personal hydrofoil. In short, you clever boys, it should be worth a bomb.
Would it not be better to have cash instead of blood, Master?
I shall not speak to you again, Number Three, if you want to live. Now, listen carefully, all of you. After luring the crew ashore, you three clever boys will kidnap the captain, a certain Lieutenant Commander Murray.
Now, let's see. With the following wind dead ahead, force 5, or for cash, 4.5, and allowing for the missing link in the chain of events, which, according to Darwin's theory, was a rod, pole, or perch anyway, I'd say to sail straight into Hong Kong Harbour, we need just a touch of the left hand down a bit.
As it's Hong Kong, Mr. Phillips, sir, shouldn't it be left-hand sideways a bit?
Just a rumour, Chief. Left-hand down a bit.
Left-hand down a bit it is, sir.
What are you two waffling on about? You're not steering the ship. Annie is.
I was just checking Annie knows her stuff, sir.
Well, the Annie I knew in Chatham certainly did.
Yes. Well, if she didn't before she met you, I don't doubt she did afterwards.
Most kind, sir.
Now then, gentlemen, during our stay in Hong Kong, I must ask you to remember that we represent the old country.
Yes,
best behavior at all times.
Yes, yes.
And if you see some cafe or some club ashore that looks interesting...
Yes, sir.
It's out of bounds.
Spoiled sport.
Well, look on the bright side, Mr. Phillips, sir. At least it looks as if we are going to get some shore leave. But at least we didn't waste our 5 new pence each on those methods of instant communication we bought in Pompey.
You bought what?
Well, there you are. So look, here it is. Here. Charlie Chan's Complete Chinese Phrase Book. It's very edumacated, if you find, sir. None of your old chop suey chat.
Who did that?
Annie, sir.
Oh, nasty.
No, sir. She was just telling us that she was doing a touch-up of the old left-hand down a bit into Hong Kong Harbour.
Very smart of her. I wanted to order left-hand down a bit ages ago.
Which would have taken us straight into the harbour wall instead of through the entrance.
Exactly, sir. No, I doubt that even Mr. Charlie Chan's excellent publication has got precisely the right phrase to cover that.
Oh, yes. What sort of phrases does Mr. Charlie Chan's book give you?
It's jolly complicated, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what I'd do without this book. I mean, supposing I was demonstrating what I can do with my yo-yo for a Chinese lady. Well, she's probably never even seen one. And it accidentally got caught in her necklace. And... I mean, how would I apologize?
Well, I'm sure that Mr. Chan will be equal to the occasion, sir.
Hmm?
Let's see now. Let's have a look. Yeah. Page 36.
36. Yes, I see. Yeah.
Honorable and humble apologies, flower of the East.
Hmm?
But will you kindly stop Rover doing that up against my rickshaw? I've got the wrong ones here. Wait a minute. Here we are. Wait a minute. Here it is.
100, pardon me, I'm sure, as constable. But can you direct me to the street of 1,000? No, that's not. Here we are. Yes. Here we are. What is it? Yo-yos. Yo-yos. Yeah. No. The answer to your question, Mr. Phillips, sir, is.
So. And what the thoughts of Chairman Mao has that got to do with yo-yos getting caught up with necklaces when it's translated?
Well, according to my copy, sir, it means, excuse me, scent of the Lotus Lady, but my dangler just whizzed down the front of your kimono.
Yeah. Don't the Orientals have a wonderful way with words?
Mummy, what's happened to Annie? Perhaps she's got hiccups.
Well, she has, sir. Annie is hiccuping her straight into the harbour wall.
Everybody down!
Henry Purbeck?
Yes, my love.
How many times do I have to tell you that if this party is going to be a success, my deliciously Ramona-prepared cocoa is only supposed to simmer, not boil. Turn the gas down immediately.
I'm sorry, my love. I got hypnotized by those little bubbles going hubble-glump, 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 hubble-glump.
Don't be coarse. Now then, those frightful people who, thank heavens, are leaving next door should be here at any moment. So, permission to remove my delicious Ramona-prepared cocoa from the stove and pour it into my dear mother's china receptacle.
Receptacle? Receptacle? You know, my love, I always thought that this was your dear mother's...
Henry Purvey, go and wash your mouth out with carbolic at once. Wait. Stand right where you are while I answer my Ramona paid-for telephone. Ramona Purvey's residence. Speak now.
Oh, Lord, just my luck. I knew I'd get you. This is the Admiral. Give me Captain Purvey.
Certainly not. He's far too busy preparing for my, thank heavens, the people next door going away at last party.
Ah, they chickened out too, did they? Well, tell him he's in the muck and he's wanted down at his office right away. He sent Troutbridge to Hong Kong and they bashed into the harbour wall. And as Murray's my son-in-law, Povey's responsible. And if he doesn't get Murray out of it, your husband will be dismissed from the service. And at his age, he's a complete no-hoper of the labour exchange.
What was that, my love?
Oh, nothing that won't keep till the morning. Right, where's your work list?
Here you are, my love.
Oh, good boy. Ah, item 9. Give Ramona's boiler a quick rake out. And heaven help you if you drop your little clinkers in my hallway.
Right, Phillips, Chief, I'm going to report to Naval Headquarters. Now then, during my absence, and because there's no other way out, you, Mr. Phillips, will be in command of the ship.
Gosh. I am proud.
Not at all. Don't issue any orders or sign anything, and there's a sporting chance I may have a ship to come back to. Good day. Chief, there's really no need to... Chief, I don't have to be piped aboard a taxi.
Right, Mr. Phillips, sir. We'd better get back on board. After you up the gangplank, sir.
No, Chief. As I'm now the commanding officer, you go first. And when I come up, you can pipe me aboard.
Oh, blimey. 3 seconds flat and he's drunk with power.
Excuse, please, Colonel.
No, that's the army. Actually, I'm the commanding officer of this ship.
Ah, bullseye. Just a British steamer. We wanted to chat up.
Pardon?
Wanted urgently by Chinese chief to take part in ludicrous tea ceremony. Kindly step into humble and totally unsuitable lickshaw.
Mr. Phillips, sir. I wouldn't be in too much of a hurry.
May I remind you that I am the commanding officer, and I'm going. Inform the engineering officer that during my absence, he's in command.
But Mr. Phillips, sir, I don't like the look of it.
And as long as he doesn't issue any orders or sign anything, there's a sporting chance I may have a ship to come back to. Right, chaps. Let's rickshaw off.
One born every minute.
Gosh, so you're the master with all those kimono dress shops on the waterfront.
How right you are, you clever boy. Now then, Commander Murray.
Oh, I'm not Commander Murray. I'm Sub-Lieutenant Phillips.
Ah. I see. My terrifyingly efficient organization has done it again. Never mind. You'll do. Now then, let me tell you what I want you to do for me. I'm sure that you'll agree if you want to live.
Oh, you needn't bother about the details. Now, let me tell you. It has come to your notice that the British frigate Troutbridge arrived here today and that we are testing out a top-secret navigational aid called Annie, and you intend to seize it, as you feel certain this instrument will prove to be a highly saleable commodity to a number of foreign powers once you've demonstrated it on your personal hydrofoil.
How on earth did you know all that? My word, you are a clever boy.
Not really, no. I saw the film.
Master, we are wasting time. Let me put some screws on Blondie.
Ah, so. And let me... And let me subject him to 24 hours of dipping on Bond's water torture.
And finally, have taken Klee kettle off stove and substituted cold and the boiling oil for dunking him.
If he does not submit, we can serve him in Lesterland as half portion of 75.
Oh, nasty. Actually, there's no need for all that, as far as I'm concerned. If you're that keen on Annie, you can have her.
What?
Oh, pity.
Oh, shame.
Oh, bloomers.
Now you've disappointed my impatient dogs, but your decision shows that you really are a clever boy. Right, numbers 1, 2, and 3. I mean 3. Proceed to HMS Troutbridge and tell them that they had better hand over Annie if they want to see Sub-Lieutenant Phillips again. Alive.
Welcome back aboard, Mr. Phillips, sir. Nice to see you sound in wind, if you'll pardon the expression, and limb.
Not in my book, it isn't. I'm not madly keen on cowards and traitors on board my ship. If it had been me, they could have tortured me for years without ever getting anything out of my pain-wracked body. Do your damnedest, I'd have shouted. I'm a British officer and a servant of Her Majesty, so my lips are sealed. Go on then, put me on the rack. Stretch my joints to their utmost. Light up my toes by sticking matches under the nails. I'm laughing this way. Here's my idea for you. Pull my teeth out one by one without anesthetic and I'll still be smiling. No, I've been laughing. All your oriental cunning will never break a senior officer of the Royal Navy. Do your worst and see if I care.
Well, I would have stood for all that, sir, but no welcome to her, Annie's bust.
Pardon?
Didn't I tell you that's why I let her go so easily? When we rammed the harbour wall, Annie broke herself, and all her poor little nuts and bolts are rattling about inside her box.
What?
Annie doesn't work anymore.
Bridge, Commander Murray speaking.
Starboard lookout here, sir. Leading Seaman Goldstein, Captain. Just in case you hadn't noticed, while you were doing your impersonation of Richard Burton shouting at Liz because she hadn't done his small, sir. There's a funny-looking object whizzing about just above the water in the harbour, and it's just about to overtake us.
What? Good heavens, it's a hydrofoil.
Oh, suit yourself. It's still a funny-looking object to me. Well, you'd better be quick, because at the speed it's going, it's not going to stop in time before it hits the harbour wall and goes straight into those three new warehouses that have just been rebuilt.
What?
Right, it didn't stop. Yes, it does.
It's not fair. You do it every time. You should be in the Tower of London, and I should be there cheering as the axe falls and your heads roll, one by one by one. It's just not fair.
Well, it's not quite like that. So after all, when we handed Annie over, we did know she was broken.
Yes, and I know who broke her, but nobody will listen to me.
We are, sir, for hours and hours and hours.
Well, sir, if that's all, we'd like to get away. I've had a message from my enchanted little wife, Rietekins. I mean, Mrs. Murray, that whilst we've been away, we've been granted married quarters, and we're moving in this afternoon. I'd like to give the little woman a hand.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten about that. Oh, yes, I feel better now. You've been given married quarters in Trafalgar Close? Yes. The house next to mine.
You're my new neighbor.
Oh, yes. Better keep your best uniform on, because my dear wife Ramona is expecting you at 8 o'clock sharp for a welcome to Trafalgar Close party.
Oh, please. Come on, chap. Rally round. I don't want to move.
Leslie Phillips, Stephen Murray and John Pertwee have been spying out the land in The Navy Lark, written by Laurie Wyman and George Evans. Leslie Phillips was the sub-lieutenant, Stephen Murray was the CO, John Pertwee was the chief petty officer, Captain Purvey was played by Richard Cordicott, Mrs. Purvey was Heather Chasen, Abel Seaman Ginger was Michael Bates, and leading Seaman Goldstein was Tenniel Evans. The show was produced by Alistair Scott Johnston. Thank you.